Okay, so we've almost made it. We go with the last part of the four-day marathon. We had Installathons before. Now we have one more marathon, but it's only about maybe 45 minutes. I don't know yet. The panel discussion, something I've never led before, so I have no idea if this works out. We have some volunteers. I asked them if they were willing to help us. They seem to be willing, I hope. At least they chat a lot. We've been thinking about a topic for this panel discussion until this morning, and I was thinking about things like, can we do a comparison of Windows and Linux software, or how competitive are we? It all didn't quite make sense, but then Paul Davis had a very nice idea, which we'll now pick up. Yes, it's yours. And the idea is just to first let all of our people in this panel tell us what their vision is, where Linux should be in 2 years for them, like what they expect to work, what they expect probably not to work, and then see from there if there is some agreement or rather disagreement. So I'll just think we start with, let me see, what's that? That's Andrea, for instance. Nah. Okay, Andrea, so would you just maybe think and tell us in a few, 2 or so minutes or 3 minutes, what do you think where, for you, Linux Audio could be in 2 years from now concerning applications, users, conferences, whatever?
Thank you. Well, I should probably divide the question into two different answers. And the first is a technical answer. And the second is a non-technical answer. I mean, from the technical point of view, the idea that I made up working with the GNU/LA project and following before the GNU/LA project all the world of Linux Audio is that there has been an incredibly fast development. I mean, if I look back to which packages were inside the GNU/LA 1 year before today and what we have today, I'm talking about Jack, but I'm talking also about other applications. The degree, the speed of development was really impressive, awesome. So my take is that if it was only for the technical aspects, in 2 years we could probably replace proprietary software for audio and video without any problems. I mean, we got a kernel that's much more efficient than the Windows kernel or than other proprietary kernels. There are a lot of persons working on that kernel. I don't think, well, you probably have already thought about it, but sometimes I think that some people don't really realize how many developers the Linux kernel has and how well they are working together to produce the kernel. And I think that the passage between the 2.4 and the 2.6 kernel, which focused quite a lot on features that are relevant to multimedia. Some of them are apparently relevant, like the integration of the low latency patch. Some of them are less relevant, like the Futaxis mechanism for inter-process communication, which could probably make the workings of Jack, for example, more efficient. But I will let Paul talk about this because he probably knows more than me about Jack. probably, I don't know. I would like to pass quite fast to the non-technical aspect of the answer. And the problem that we are facing, especially in Europe, of course, I currently work in Italy, and most of the persons that I work for directly are European, so my main focus is on Europe, but that can be easily extended to the rest of the world, in my opinion, is that we are facing an incredibly violent attack, a legal attack. And I will be much more specific. I'm talking about software patents, which right now are not legal in Europe for now, but they could be in quite a short time. And let me just briefly, I'm not going to dwell too much into the topic because not, I mean, I would love to, but it is a complex topic. I'm not a lawyer and you would probably get bored quite easily. But anyway, just to make a few examples, free software is in itself, won't probably be able to exist if software patents are approved in Europe by the European Parliament. Because basically what a software patent is putting the patent, is making an algorithm, proprietary. That's something that the European Patent Office quite doesn't understand or doesn't want to understand. And I'm more of the second opinion than the first. That basically means, as you all know, since you can reduce every algorithm to a Turing machine, basically once you patent an algorithm, you have patented all possible algorithms that derive from that algorithm. And the second point that is maybe subtler than the first is the patentability of file formats. Usually what the European Patent Office will tell you is that, okay, we are going to patent software, but don't worry, we will save interoperability, you will be able to use your file format. I mean, that's not enough for your free file formats, like OGVorbis, for example, or any other format. I mean, that's not enough for me personally. I want to use free formats and I want to use free software. But anyway, the subtle point is that since basically every file format can be expressed as the series of operations that an abstract machine has to do in order to create that particular format, if software patents are approved, that basically means that also almost automatically even file formats are patented. Because that's something that the European Patent Office is already trying to do. I mean, patenting file formats on the basis that that file format can be expressed by an abstract machine. So I'm sorry if I'm being overly pessimistic about this, but actually I'm not pessimistic. I think that we can change this direction. What really enrages me is that, it's like when you do a race, is that the correct English word to, a race, and you're winning, and your opponent sees that you're winning, then he just pulls off a gun and fires at you. And that's what's happening with software patents. I mean, technically, we are already on the way of being better than proprietary software. And in most cases, we are already better than the proprietary software. And there are a lot of economical interests, as you can very well understand, behind proprietary software. And right now, they're lobbying very heavily the European Commission. And what is happening is that the European Parliament has already for two times has rejected the proposal by the European Commission to patent software. And the European Commission doesn't really get it. It wants software to be patented. So what can we do about this? I mean, every person who cares about free software in the audio domain, the specific case, should probably contact the Foundation for a Free Information Infrastructure. That's ffii.org. And they are the main actor in Europe who is organizing the fight against software patents. So I would encourage everyone who wants to see 2 years from now free software in the audio field to be succeeding, to think about this problem, to get informed about this problem, and to act now. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Before we start discussing this in the group, I just want every one of you to state his opinion. So the next one is Fernando.
About the question about the 2 years. Yes. Ooh, that's a tough one. Yeah, I didn't bring my crystal future prediction device. No, that's it's pretty much what Andrea has already said. I guess better everything. You know, he talked about the kernel. Obviously, the applications will not stay where they are today. Now, exactly where we will be, I have no idea, really. It's, nobody knows. So, next.
Let's see. Well, I guess the first thing I'd say is in 2 years, I'd actually like to have software that was better than the proprietary software, which I don't think we have much of at this point. I guess I'd like to be making lots of money from Linux audio software. That would be very nice. I think the main thing I'd like to see happen over the next 2 years is expressed as generally as I can, is for Linux audio to get to a place where you can comfortably suggest to your studio-owning friend that it might be a viable option for them to consider and not fill that recommendation with 100 caveats. I think at the moment we have a huge amount of really cool and really interesting software. And if you are an experimental musician, if you're a technical person who, as the great quote says, never let what you're trying to do interfere with your further, with gaining further knowledge of computer science. If that doesn't stand in your way, I think Linux is a wonderful place to play with audio, but I also think that, being realistic, for most of the people who use audio software out in the world, Linux still does not represent a particularly viable alternative. And I think that in 2 years, it's not unreasonable to hope that we might get to the point where it does. I'm not sure exactly how we do it. I think it's a lot of hard work. I think it might require more coordination than we're capable of. But it would be very nice to see that happen.
Okay, I think we'll just go on in the road like this with Takashi. Maybe you can take a look at this more from the technical perspective and say what you think about your next work in the next 2 years and what you plan to achieve, perhaps.
Oh, next 2 years, bug-free ASA drivers. Well, I hope in next 2 years, more and more hardware companies will cope with together with Linux. Actually, it is happening now. We, as developers, have already the contact with some hardware vendors, and they show already some interest to the Linux, and especially to the Linux audio. And from technical point of view, well, I think this year, for example, we will need to focus more on stability and at least very stable sound system to achieve. This is for me, it's a primary goal, and at least for this year and for half year. After that, we can start again what we can improve, really, what the users really need more functionality. Before that, I think my idea, before that, we need to concentrate on the stability and usability. And of course, this includes the documentation too, as many of you already know. And that means to make documentation, to improve the documentation, we need a back end to get better user response and better web pages and so on. Well, that's what I want to have in 2 years.
Okay. Yeah, please do. Now you've just stolen my joke, because you said bug fixing for six months, and I said, hey, then that means 18 months left for documentation writing. shit. Okay, but you mentioned that yourself. So, but this brings us wonderfully to Mr. Phillips, and maybe he has some ideas what he would like to see or what he envisions to be there in 2 years from now on.
It's actually pretty easy. Lash 0.5. Ardor 10.0, ALSA 30 point something. I actually do have a few real high items high on the wish list. I hope to see just everybody adopt Jack, which I think is really a marvelous thing, really pretty incredible thing. I know the sort of wedding of Jack audio with MIDI will be very welcome. I don't mind more, just more of everything, but I would really like to see a few things just better, So even half a dozen very, very good apps, very complete in every respect, not just the documentation, but the connectivity, the ease of use, professional capabilities. I think we're very fortunate that people think and create with a very high level of creativity. I mean, in 1996, you had just the OSS free API, and it was enough if your Sound Blaster worked, for playing some game or something like that. But, you know, I hear it a lot that certainly if you read Slashdot, whenever audio is discussed, it's always, oh, you know, Linux, use the right platform for the job, you know, it's just Windows or the Mac or something like that. But I usually never respond to those kinds of statements, but every now and then I will fire back that, well, you know, Linus Torvalds himself said he just couldn't imagine the Linux kernel running on anything except an x86 architecture. Gosh. So I think that, like I say, I would really like to see, and it's, I think, very attainable, the sort of the handful of pretty obvious candidates, Ardor, Rose Garden, Muse. I think we could probably make an easy list of about a dozen applications that are in fact the highest profile applications in Linux audio domain. And I would like to see their interconnectivity, their maturity, and then I can stop writing about it all and just start using it. I'd love that.
Okay. Okay, then there's still Itso left. I wonder how you could envision this at universities and teaching students. Will the next 2 years change how you train your students, or do you see any complete changes, provided that Linux and audio continue to be developed in the pace as it is right now?
Well, since I spoke for like an hour, I'll be very brief. I mean, I certainly hope that Linux adoption will be a lot greater, whether that be by my own efforts or others' efforts. I think that's quite viable because Linux is ever improving, and that just adds more to the value of switching to it. So in 2 years, I would definitely see its wider adoption. From a personal standpoint, I'm quite content with what I have right now to work with, and any improvement at this point is very welcome, but to me, already Linux is there, it's ready for use. And then there's also this uglier maybe aspect, political aspect, which we may see a lot more of in the coming years, and that is that there might be much more increasing pressure against adoption of Linux in a very political and commercial way, and I'm foreseeing a lot more of that in the next 2 years. But I think that Linux will prevail, and maybe not be as prominent as we would maybe want it to be in 2 years, but it's definitely in the right course.
Okay, then I think from now on we can just try to see if the audience would want to participate in this. Matthias has the other microphone, and if anyone would like to comment on some of the statements we heard right now, then please go ahead, show your sign if we have anyone. Don't be afraid, no. There is one. François? There was a question. Yeah, he's walking there.
Thank you, sorry for making you take such a long walk. What I would like to see also is more and more integration of audio software into distributions, something that is already on its way with DMUDI and Debian. What I would like to see is same thing happen for other distributions. I think that now a very significant step has been taken with the integration of ALSA into the 2.6 kernel, which means that the next distributions integrating the 2.6 kernel will also integrate the configuration tools to configure and install ALSA by default, which means that once this is done, a significant part of the job is done. Next step will be that people at the main distributors start to take over the packaging and make the packages that are already available on Planet Karma, for instance, and be in their distributions. I don't know if we can have if we can, let's say, have an influence on that. But I think that it may help get more and more people use Linux for audio and music.
Does anyone want to comment here on this side? Let's see, we have three. We start from left to right, Fernando.
Okay. That might start happening in the future. I mean, integration of packages. That, for example, I have at Planet Karma into what I currently use, which is Fedora and Red Hat. In particular, Fedora is going to have what will be called Fedora Extras, I believe, which will be optional packages that will not be a part of the main set of CDs. And there's a structure, I mean, it's a long story, so I won't go into that, but there's going to be a structure for external submission of packages and quality control. So probably I will start at some point submitting packages that I have. This will be made easier by the fact that the next Fedora, as you probably all know, is 2.6 in ALSA, which was the main hurdle before, because most of my applications directly or indirectly, I just said my application. My God, okay. And this is being recorded and it will be archived for Nestor. The applications that I humbly package, that are written by thousands of people all over the world, without them, none of this would have happened. Anyway, so I had to clarify that. Where was I? Yeah. Okay. My applications. Anyway, they directly or indirectly depend on ALSA, which was not part of the previous Red Hat releases. Regretfully, some of the key things that would be needed for serious audio applications are apparently not going to be part of the standard kernel shipped, namely the preemptible kernel patch. It is a little bit apparently less stable and the kernel overall, and not that many drivers have been thoroughly tested, apparently. So it's not going to be there. And that means higher latencies, at least in the tests I've done. That is true.
So you'll be packaging 2.4?
So I'll, no. Well, I mean, yeah.
Backport 2.4. Yeah, you should. So you'll be packaging 2.4 so people can downgrade?
Which means, now probably, I don't know, I have no idea what I'm exactly going to do, but probably I will have to still keep packaging kernels, which is something which I wanted to avoid doing. It's, you know, probably 2.6, and probably as well 2.4 initially. There's one patch that I need that's not available. Takashi knows about it. Otherwise, certain video cards will have latency issues when used with DRM. But anyway, so that integration hopefully will happen more and more. Although for real hardcore low latency applications, apparently we will still need a different kernel than the one that comes with the distribution, as is the case in Mandrake, for example, or the Moody.
I was going to say I have actually very ambiguous feelings about the packaging and distribution stuff. On the one hand, I use Planet Karma because I'd rather spend my time coding than compiling and, you know, keeping my system shipped, you know, completely set up. I just type apt-get upgrade and, you know, it's done, except for Ardor. And it obviously is very desirable that we get distributions of Linux where the infrastructure is present, so that any applications that you may want to run will run with the best performance that they can possibly get. But at the same time, for those few people involved in Arda, in Linux audio development, sorry, I didn't mean Arda, but involved in Linux, or there is only Arda, no, sorry. I didn't say
that. Welcome to the club.
For those people who are involved in Linux audio development and have even a small eye on, you know, making even part of their living from the process, the automatic inclusion of all the packages in distributions is, it may not necessarily be completely unwelcome, because obviously they'll be slightly out of date and you can tell people to get the new ones. It's not clear that it's necessarily a good thing. Certainly, we would want to see versions of Linux that had Jack running, that had a properly built kernel and so forth. It's not totally clear to me that, for instance, that everybody who is an author of the packages that are on Karma right now wants to see, Fedora and SUSE and Mandrake and everything, just build them in. I'm not speaking for anybody else, but I'm just guessing I'm not the only person who feels that this automatic inclusion is a good thing. And that presents a little bit of a quandary, of course, because I think all the software that is discussed or described here is GPL'd, and it's obviously perfectly legal to do this. In fact, from a user's perspective, it's certainly even a desirable thing to do this. If you want to buy a single distribution, get all the tools on it, then you're good to go. But it does create, at the very least, some questions about the ecosystem for the software. There are certainly tools out there that are, they're either relatively complete already, or they're fairly small programs that either are complete or will be complete fairly soon. But at the same time, it's clear, if you look at by comparison with the commercial field, that some audio software is very big and very complex and takes a very long time to create. And as much as I use the GPL from a philosophical position as much as anything, it doesn't automatically mean I'm 100% keen on it just being shipped out to, hundreds of thousands of machines to just use. The real problem being, of course, not that hundreds of thousands of people use it without paying you, but hundreds of thousands of people use it without having any clue of how it was developed, the motivation that it was developed under. They don't even necessarily have much of a clue that there's actually a website where they can fill out bug reports or feature requests. And so it's a bit of a mixed bag. I mean, I definitely see it as a big benefit for end users, and it will improve the profile of Linux audio in the world as a whole. But it does create a certain ambiguity if you have even sort of slightly commercial interests in the field.
Okay. Did you want to add something on François' statement about integration? Okay.
I want to mention about two things about kernel. As Fernando mentioned. For example, there are still a little bit the latency problems, and they are not still audited. And the important thing is to communicate with kernel developer about the problem exists, and because they don't know that latency problem really still exists. So if you have a kernel problem, then you should be better to contact with kernel developer, or just to once post to Linux audio developers to mention that something going wrong. That's the first step to improve the technical things. And this is also, the contact with the main developer is very important. And for example, I really want to see a real-time LSM module in the main kernel tree. This should happen, but unfortunately, many projects are closed in itself. That means, yes, it works for me, then it doesn't matter. There's such a attitude will prohibit the Linux, all the things to bring to the mainstream. So I would like to encourage you so to promote something you wrote to the mainstream. So for example, if you write something good for the kernel patch, and then send it to the Linux kernel main list or something like that, or main kernel developer, then yeah, they will hear, they will see what you write. Okay, that's the first one. And another one is I'm a little bit so pessimistic about unifying of the audio, Linux audio distributions. There will be also in the future different distributors. That means there will be different variants in future too. So that also means there are different systems, different versions. And running, so making one unified distribution will be, of course, nice, but my opinion, my guess is that it won't work, it won't happen well. And instead of that, the better way is to communicate from an application developers and distributors. That means if you update your application, then you can contact with distributors. Then the distributors can build the package for you. So matching your application to any commercial distributions, basically it is not your job. It's a job for distributor. So this idea is, I hope that many developers understand that, for example, I'm maintaining many packages of SUSE distributions, and I'll be happy to see any mail, any communication from application developers. Yes, then I can build for them too, and I can send them back. I can send them back their ready binary RPM packages, for example, to put on their website, web page. So such a communication is, in my opinion, is very important. Okay.
Just very briefly, basically I agree with Takashi, but I don't see anytime soon the unification of Linux audio distribution, neither. I'm sorry about that, Fernando. You will have to continue packaging Planet Karma. I'm sorry. No, it could happen, but from what I see, I mean, seeing what the situation is today, and speaking of very practical things, the Agnura project right now doesn't have the manpower to provide a unified platform for all possible users and all possible necessities. It might be one day, I mean, if there is a commercial interest, and that means being able to have the resources, it doesn't mean necessarily money. Money is not the only resource, and sometimes my experience is that money is a bad resource. It's difficult to spend money on free software, but manpower is a very good resource. It might be that someday we will have that, but not today. For the time being, I very much agree with Takashi that what we need is a very clear, we have to have it clear for ourselves as developers or packagers or project leads or whoever we are, and we have to make it very clear to users. We have to educate users in this regards. We have to have a very clear step list, communication channels. When the user has got a problem with a package, it shouldn't bug the developer. It should know precisely who to contact. Just to make a small example, one thing that I always wanted for the Moody, for Agnura the Moody, and we still don't have, is an automatic bug reporting script. Nicely looking automatic bug reporting script. When there is the problem, the user doesn't have to know who to send the bug to, because the bug reporting script will just fill in the fields and send an email to us. And that means lowering the difficulties for the user. That means that we get more bug reports, because of course the main concept is that if something is too difficult or if something is not really simple, the user won't do it. because it's not, I mean, just a small fraction of users care so much or do understand so much how free software works that they do understand that bug reporting is actually an essential part of the whole process. Most of them simply don't know that, don't understand that. So we should educate the users about the importance of bug reporting, and we should create tools so that bug reporting from the user to the distributors and to the packagers and from the packagers to the in Debian they're called upstream developers. I mean the core developers, the main developers of the software, is much more automated. That could be, for example, a central website for Linux Audio, where we all cater there, and there is an automatic, for example, there are mailing lists. A bug reporting mailing list for each project, so that I know inside the Immuni distribution that if a package doesn't work, I know that they should send the bug report to that mailing list. Where right now I have to run through 10,000 mailing lists and try to understand, or I send the bug report to Linux Audio Dev, but that's not always the best option. I mean.
Okay. You want to ask something?
So there's a question from IRC. Okay.
Yes, Jim Lynch asks, how will each of you on the panel try to support and or evangelize open hardware?
Can you say a little bit louder?
I'm sorry. How will each of you on the panel try to support and or evangelize open hardware?
Each with one short sentence, perhaps? Those who know?
Who knows? I know.
Okay. This is Paul Davis. Open hardware is an interesting question. Several people have heard me say many times in the last 4 days that the only way you're going to survive if you want to make any money doing audio software is to be somehow involved with hardware. There's very little money involved in audio software for anybody. And so, you know, whether it's a particular audio interface that you bundle your software with, whether it's a control surface, whether it's a super duper blue and pink microphone that you hand away to your users and it's the only thing that your application will record from. The blue and pink dongle mic. Whatever it is, hardware is special because it can't be copied very easily. And so open hardware is an interesting issue in the sense that it still can't be copied very easily because it's a piece of hardware. You certainly can't just, FTP it from, Arda.org or Planet Karma. But on the other hand, it can be copied. And it's no longer something that you can use for, I mean, I hate to use the word vendor lock-in because, not the phrase vendor lock-in, it would be a word in German, but in English it's three words. I hate to use that phrase, but vendor lock-in, it's not so much vendor lock-in, but providing a reason why somebody would want to give you money in exchange for various things that you offer them. Software is not often one of them. And hardware often is. And so, although I think open hardware is very exciting in the sense that it lets people do the same kind of collaborative sharing of ideas that happens in the software world, it's not so clear what its appeal is to people who are involved on the development side, at least in the software world. I can understand there may be people who just want to make open hardware. They're not that interested in software. And I actually think it's a great idea, but again, a little bit like the distribution issue, I think it's just ambiguous exactly what the benefits are for everybody involved. I think it's really important that although the efforts that we're all involved in, I mean, most people here are working with Linux Audio because they like it, they do it in their spare time, they get the benefit of doing it at work. If we completely remove all possibility of cash flow from this enterprise, I don't think it will go very far. There's a limit to how much evangelizing will go. I think Itzo said in his talk, I think he said at some point, or Well, he had a slide talking about perceiving the value of free software, and I actually thought he was going to talk about the way that when you don't charge anything for it, people think it's worthless. And I think that is an unfortunate reality because we know it's not true. Just because stuff is free does not mean it's worthless. But I do think that if we continue to try to figure out ways to make everything totally free and everything is just part of a big grab bag that everybody dips into, our chance of reaching outside of the pool of people who are already converted goes down. Like it or not, most of the world thinks that when you pay for something that you get something for your money. And we just need to be a little careful of going too far in the direction of just saying, let's just blow the whole field wide open. That doesn't mean we shouldn't have open hardware. I think having open specs for a hardware controller, it would be fantastic. You know, who wants to go spend $1,000 on a Mackie control? But having things so open that, again, we just remove any possibility of there being any cash flow at all between now and the next 15 years is probably not going to be a great thing in terms of bringing this to a wider audience. So that's my.
just wanted to add to what Paul said. It's Andrea speaking, Andrea Glorios, just for the people on the internet. Well, basically, the problem that Paul. Well, first of all, I think that open hardware is a fascinating topic. I mean, it's really fascinating. I think that for the time being, it mostly pertains to the research community, to the academical community. For the time being, there is no economical viability for open hardware. I mean, probably most of you already know, but making a diagram of a piece of hardware and building that piece of hardware, there is a very large step. And you need investments to do that. You need a lot of investments. So you can't expect people to simply, okay, so let's put $100 billion to build a factory, to build hardware, and then give it away, all the specification for free, as much as they would like it. But it won't happen anytime soon. And that's one point. I must say that what Paul has said about the risk that raising too much the bar on the freeness of free software could actually lower down the number of persons we can evangelize about free software is true today, and it is for me and for the research institution that I work for a very interesting topic of research in the sense, not specifically as much as software is concerned, but as much as a social system is concerned. I mean, trying to understand, free software is an ecosystem, basically. People who participate in the free software ecosystem have advantages from the fact that they use free software, and it can happen, it doesn't always happen, but it can happen that they do understand that giving back to the author is actually an advantage to them. So, I mean, I don't know if we will ever have a society in which everything is free. I don't know if that's desirable. I mean, I don't have an answer. I think it's a very interesting topic of research. And as much as the Agnula project is concerned, we don't necessarily push for open hardware for the reasons that I just told. I mean, it's not. It's a lot of work, and when you have limited manpower, you have to choose what's most efficient. What we will push a lot for, and we are going to be. I mean, as long as I am somewhat the Benny dictator of the project, we're going to be very strict on this point. I mean, asking from hardware vendors open specifications of their hardware. This is a problem that we are currently facing with the ALSA project about distributing the ALSA firmware package. I mean, the set of firmware that you usually need, that you mostly need to work with professional grade audio cards. And the Moody currently doesn't ship the ALSA firmware package. And this is very unfortunate for users because they have to download a separate package in order to use, for example, the RME cards or every other card. But on the other hand, I'm still, since I and the people that I talk to actually are not yet sure whether that firmware is to be considered software, and if it's to be considered software, whether we should have the source code, and what is the source code of firmware? I mean, these are all still open questions, but until we have a very clear understanding of the issue, what we will do towards hardware companies is asking them for, I mean, total transparency, Because otherwise, one thing that people told me about this firmware problem is that, but users want it. But on the other hand, users want a lot of things. And I mean, if I don't mean to be rude, really. Users are one of our most precious resources. But if a user tells me that he or she wants nice blinking lights, well, go buy Windows. I mean, and not being rude, but users should be aware of the pros and the cons of what they are asking for.
Can I add one more? Andrea just reminded me of another sort of quick point about this, that I think it's very important to make a distinction between an open and fully specified interface to something and, if you like, an open design. It's quite possible to build something that contains, you know, very proprietary ideas, maybe even things that 10 people have worked on for years, but to still have a completely open interface to control it and access it. And I think that the sort of thing that we've gotten from the audio interface manufacturers that have cooperated with ALSA is maybe not completely, but, you know, more or less completely open interface. And a lot of hardware manufacturers don't understand that we only need an open interface. We do not need to know the secret details of how their chips work. We need to know how to program their registers, how to write firmware to the card, and so forth. And there's a very important distinction that I think many hardware manufacturers, and in fact, quite a lot of software companies don't understand, that this whole question of an open interface is much more important than, you know, will you tell us how your card works? We just need a published interface, and that's all.
I just wanted to clarify for the person that I didn't already bore enough with the details of this ALSA firmware problem. My personal position on the problem of firmware is that we should be pragmatic. I mean, if users are not able to easily use professional-grade audio cards, they will never use free software. I mean, on the other hand, Agnula is not the pet project of mine. As much as I have maybe some kind of respect inside the community, so people discuss with me things, I want to discuss things with people. What I would like to see, and I sent some email messages to the Linux Audio Dev mailing list, is try to reach a consensus amongst the community about what the best course of action regarding this problem of firmware. It's a problem that is probably going to happen again in a slightly different form. So the sooner we start to discuss what's the best way for free software lovers to solve this kind of problems, the better.
Sorry. For the BR after.
I just wanted to mention something else about the open hardware. I don't know if this was already mentioned. I felt like I didn't. And that is that there is something inherently good about pursuing this issue of open hardware, because it seems to me like it's almost like a cycle that is akin to what Linux had when it started, except that its pace is a lot slower because it's coming up against a much greater roadblocks in terms of financial support. But I think that in the long run, if we are capable of promoting this open hardware model, it's not only in the spirit of our GNU world, but it's also something that could, in the long run, not necessarily replace our proprietary hardware, but it would definitely encourage, through competition, more openness from such proprietary hardware, because I think economically it could be viable in that respect, that, let's say, engineers or whoever is capable of producing a viable open hardware would get together, create the schematics, create the conceptual value of this particular hardware, find a possible manufacturer which would manufacture this at large and sell it. And if we get the good software support, let's say maybe a limited sort of example would be Core Sound PDA hardware, right? And we get this manufacturer to manufacture it. And of course, if we as Linux users would know that this, let's say, sound card would be 100% supported by Linux, then I'll be first to go out there and buy it. Because not only will we know that every single quirk about that card, but we'll also know that our drive would be 100% supported by it. In the end, even if this card would not succeed financially, and maybe the company would go under, which is a scary thought, but you would still have this pressure on the closed part of the hardware vendors, who would then be forced to open their specifications to make their cards as competitive as this particular hardware. So I think the pursuit of the open hardware should be kept alive.
Okay, there is one question.
In light of this discussion, what is your favorite hardware vendor at the moment for Linux audio? So give some credit.
One by one?
I do have lots of MIDI-MAN cards, 66 1010s. Those are the ones that I've pretty much standardized on. With this Omni-IO little box that has microphone inputs. Those are very nice. And they work very well with ALSA.
I don't think I need to answer that question.
Wow. I have also too much sound cards. Yeah, it's hard to choose. Well, and daily work, I'm using SoundBlaster Live. Well, it's not working. Some Teratech cards, high-end cards. I'm often using. Well, it's well supported. Yes.
Is no comment an acceptable answer, or should I answer? From what I gather from our packages, the point is that the Moody is not mainly made by developers. We are packagers. So what I understood is that RME cards are quite good. They're quite well supported, they work quite well, they're professional grade. But aside from that, I don't know.
Just to clarify, is this pertaining only to audio cards or any part of hardware?
No, I hope not.
Okay. Well, I guess then I would cite Core Sound as one of the really approachable companies. And then also I would cite Arima, a company which is manufacturing a series of notebooks for their, great, great assistance in resolving some of the issues. Arima, they're actually manufacturers of a chassis for notebooks that are being resold by eMachines and Voodoo PC and a bunch of other ones. I bought one, so I guess this is like a blunt commercial for them, I don't know.
I don't own my favorite hardware yet, so can't really answer. Although I should say I do agree with everybody concerning the PD audio card. I have a review model of that card, and it's pretty impressive, and the company is very responsive. I think the company is one guy, So everybody at Core Sound is very, very responsive. They work like crazy. Just in terms of audio, since I've started using Linux, I've probably run through maybe 7 or 8 sound cards. It's actually kind of surprising that they've all worked with Linux. I don't know. If you read the ALSA users list,
Some addition from Fernando?
Yeah. I wanted to add a caveat in the sense that don't think that I went out and evaluated tons of cards and then selected those as a winner. Because No. Just to set things straight, because most people are probably aware I didn't do that, but somebody in the audience might think I did that.
That's the same word.
Yeah, exactly. So the way this happened is I knew those chipsets were very well supported. The features set, those are old cards by now, right? The chipsets work very well. The price was reasonable. The features were reasonable. And then after that, it works very well. In my case, it makes sense in a lab to have a standard. It helps. All students go to station and they have something they know it works and how it works. So that's not to say that they're bad cards. There may be something much better now. I don't know. Just to set the record straight.
Okay, there's one more thing that we haven't... Oh, is there a question? No, not really. There is one more thing that we haven't talked about when we looked into the looking glass, which I was curious in to hear your opinion. How do you think will the dark side, the commercial, currently Windows side, react in the next 2 years? So do you think we will be seeing something like Ableton, a Cubase kind of thing, or anything else under Linux? I think, again, each of you has a short time for 1-2 minutes to say what he thinks about it.
I'm slow. I have to think.
It would be nice to have less to say, wouldn't it? I've mentioned on LAD a couple of times that I haven't personally been told, but people within the community have been told, and it's been confirmed that Steinberg has at least Nuendo, and I think Cubase SX already running on Linux, which is not surprising because they're both based on engines that were originally written for IRIX, and they have them running on obviously on OS 10, so it's not a big surprise that you'd be able to get software running reasonably easily on Linux. And I think most of the newer applications that run on OS 10 could probably be ported to Linux relatively easily by these companies if they really felt they wanted to. I personally don't think it's very likely that this will happen for the simple reason that the market for all of this stuff is tiny. Most of you have probably heard me rant online about, you know, how little Steinberg was sold for when Pinnacle bought them. $24 million for the number two company in audio software, arguably. And likewise, companies like Mackie, who weren't sold but effectively were sold for about $17 million, is a company with cool hardware, cool ads. At least in the States, you see their stuff everywhere. You know, you go to a live gig and there's Mackie gear, and they're worth $17 million. Admittedly, some of this is because they totally screwed up the HDR product and almost went bankrupt, but it's still a pointer to the fact that the audio software and even the audio hardware market is very, very small. And most of these companies are not very big either, and they have sometimes not even enough manpower to keep their Windows and Mac OS stuff going. So on the one hand, I don't think it's very likely. On the other hand, if it did happen, one has to step back and say, well, you know, what would be the consequences? You imagine if Steinberg, or let alone even DigiDesign, announced next month in a new series of ad campaigns that Linux was the right platform for audio. And they'd been testing it for the last 2 years and decided it was incredibly stable. And, you know, Pro Tools would be available as of Q4 of this year and all the rest of it. It's an interesting question. My own feeling is that for most of the people who attend this conference and for most of the people who are on the mailing list that we're on, it wouldn't necessarily have a dramatic effect. We would probably carry on working on the projects that we're working on and doing the things that we're doing, either because we're in love with them or we genuinely believe that they're better than the competition or that there is no competition for them. But we go back to the sort of evangelizing that Itzo was talking about earlier. I think it's probably dead. You're going to have people who've heard us, maybe just a little whisper, reaching them to whatever reaches that Linux is cool, and then a big professional company comes in and says, yeah, it is, and here's our product. People will jump ship, and I think our chance of evangelizing and reaching to them will be not zero, but will be much reduced. So, as I said, I don't think it necessarily will have much effect on what most of us actually do on a day-to-day basis, but I think it totally changes the environment into which this work might expand.
However, it would make life easier for us in the, you know, trying to have Linux systems in our studios and labs. Because if the, you know, say, Pro Tools comes over and, you know, says Linux is the platform, then you can then, because one of the problems is that we have to maintain both Linux and something like macOS 10 because the students will sign off for the course because they see that there's a Pro Tools machine there in the studio. So that, you know, then it might be that the task of evangelizing can be made easier because we have the machines that are running, and then just say, oh look, this is, but there's also this other software here which we will be using in these 10 courses. And then they will have to do it, and they'll probably, I don't know.
One thing I might like to say about the availability of, especially the high-profile commercial packages, let's say Cubase was released for Linux tomorrow, that doesn't make Linux easier to use. And it certainly doesn't make Linux easier to use for somebody coming from the Windows Mac world. So the attraction isn't merely Cubase. It's like that doesn't resolve all the problems that a new user faces. So it's... It requires a little more than just their presence on the scene. The other thing too I think it would obviously start attracting people, but if Linux itself is difficult for them to use, they're not going to get very far with using Cubase on it now, are they? So, and again, with hardware support, where's the hardware support? There are a lot of other questions that sort of revolve around it.
Yes. I just want to tell a little rumor I heard a couple of hours ago in the internet, and I think most of you know this Final Scratch product, and yeah, I heard that it won't continue its Linux support, and it will be shipped for Windows XP in the near future. So I mean, might not be that interesting, and I couldn't care less, but I mean, it's just also has to do with the commercial software for Linux stuff.
Can I? No, I don't know. I mean, no. I will let François speak.
Okay. Well, if I would see the presence of Cubase on Linux to be a major attractive factor to Linux, I would consider that a major failure for us, because for only one reason, it's not free software, that's all.
I would, I do agree with François, basically, but I just wanted to, I think that we should see, as Paul has actually said, we should try to see the strategic value of supposing that proprietary software companies tomorrow will release their software on Linux, which is quite improbable in my opinion, but supposing, let's play a fantasy game. I mean, let's suppose that a proprietary company tomorrow, a strong proprietary company, releases its software on Linux. I want to make an example from another field, which is a slightly different field. As Paul correctly pointed out, the audio market is very tiny. When IBM decided to jump on the Linux bandwagon, not on the free software bandwagon, on the Linux bandwagon, that's different. One thing that they did is to create a TV commercial, a very good TV commercial, by the way. I mean, aesthetically speaking, it was really well done. About, it was like something 2001, A Space Odyssey, with this kid that you should see it anyway. It's really nice. But what happened is that a lot of people who watch TV usually looked at this advertisement and started thinking, what is Linux? Because they didn't hear about it ever. And that's a good thing. Even though I would tend to say GNU Linux instead of Linux, but I mean, I'm happy if people just say Linux instead of saying something else. I mean, the real issue, in my opinion, that's something that we should think about, we should think how to handle it, is to take all these persons, we're still playing the fantasy game, I mean, but we should take this person that come to Linux or start to using a free software platform only because there is a proprietary program running on it, grab them and tell them, look, there is a bunch of free software programs that are very good and probably are as good as you need
for your job? Because usually what happens with proprietary programs is that they have much more features than they usually need, because they do need to. I mean, they have a very wide market, wide dispersed user base, so they have to put in every single feature that every single user would possibly want to use, while free software can be much more specific. So we should prepare ourselves, and that, I mean, that all links to what Itzo said about evangelizing and being prepared for that. I don't think that I don't think that having a proprietary company release a software on the Linux platform is necessarily a bad thing if we know how to handle the situation. The bad thing is that my impression is that we don't know how to handle that situation. I mean, we're still not prepared to handle that situation for many reasons. Actually, if we have some time later, I remember that there is something that we'll like to see in 2 years from now, and I didn't see before, so after the round of talking, I will add it.
I think there is already some examples we can draw upon, and definitely speaking from the educational aspect, I think the presence of commercial software on Linux would not necessarily deter or even affect the free software at all. If anything, it would be a flattering proof that Linux Audio is really viable on Linux platform, and it would be like a seal of approval that we would await from a commercial world, which, whether we like it or not, still has the upper hand on what we are doing. But we can look at, you know, example of OS X. You do have proprietary software running on it, but there is still a huge effort poured into the open source software that is running on OS X, whether through a Xlayer or as some kind of a carbonized or cocoa version of that application. And in the studios where I've been at least active, those particular applications have been used as much, at least as much, as the proprietary versions. And very often they actually overlapped in their functionality. And because when you look at the proprietary software, usually even Cubase and big names like those, they're not really selling because everything about them is great, but because they have one or several key points which are their strong points. And when you look at it, really, in Linux, we just have those things, or GNU Linux, or however we're going to call it, we have just those things more focused in smaller applications. Every single software we saw here on the conference had some kind of a niche to it, which was making it unique in some shape or form, and therefore useful for a particular occasion. So therefore, those big names, when they come in, I think they would be just nothing more than just confirmation of what we've been saying all along, and that is that Linux is ready for audio.
So at this point, there is only, I think, Fernando left, who has not yet said his opinion on his vision for the future. So he is your last chance after that. No, nobody else.
Yeah, I sort of interpreted the question differently, because I interpreted the question to be what I think will happen, okay, which is impossible to predict, and that's why I said. Now, it's different if what is it that I would like to see, okay? And one of the things I would like to see in 2 years is a little bit more focus by the developers on usability issues of software packages. And I can give one very short example of what I mean by that. Very recently, I created, for example, a special menu system for the Planet Karma packages. With the idea that, for example, using QJAX CTL's new functionality, where you can call it with an argument that is a program, then the program, QJAX CTL starts JAX server first and then starts the program, so it's a one-step operation for a user. Okay, a new user comes in, wants to use, let's say, Hydrogen. So selects it from the menu, and up pops Hydrogen after JAX starts, and there it is. It has the patcher and Hydrogen, it's working, low latency, yada, yada, yada. Now, that's not possible with all applications, because some of them, for example, don't have a way to specify to the app from the command line that they should use JAX. So the first time the application starts, it doesn't know what to do and chooses a default, which might be wrong, might be OSS. So those applications can't be used the first time by a user without first going through some configuration step. So it's little things like that make a big difference in usability. So I would really like details like that. And those are small details, right? But they make a big difference. And I think it will happen. It's not, that's probably a sure thing to say. Okay.
Well, now I think we are slowly trying to come to an end. We've been attempting to take some attempts to see the future. Now, I think, okay, one short technical issue, okay.
I met an embedded developer on Friday when I was riding on the train, and he was very interested in the conference, but he couldn't come. And I wonder, are there overlaps where audio and embedded could collaborate? Are there any entry points for interested people?
Just one thing, embedded in itself doesn't mean anything. I mean, it's a very, there could probably be areas of common interest, but we should first define what embedded means, because over the time, and even different areas, people use the word embedded to mean completely different things, from tiny electronic systems to systems that are basically, I mean, they are huge, but they're embedded in the sense that you can't change the software that's running inside it. So the answer is that I don't know, because I don't know what does embedded mean in this context.
I can immediately point out two companies that are already working in the field of Linux audio that I think would fit that bill, which is Plugzilla and Muse Research. They both build a 2U rack mount unit that runs Linux, that runs VST plugins as a dedicated machine. You don't get the plugin GUI. Well, actually, I think Muse you might, but anyway, it's basically just a rack mount system that you put on your studio rack or on your live touring equipment, and you take it out and it's reliable and solid and it doesn't ever crash. And it's sort of a fusion of Linux and a lot of the kinds of things that we work on. And I think that that area, I mean, the Windows world, a lot of people there now, people love a lot of the instruments you can get for Windows as VST plugins or DXI plugins, but they don't like the reliability of the workstations and the sequencers, and they want machines that they can take out and play live for gigs and not necessarily even have to run a monitor. It may be a very small window of opportunity, but I think there is some window of opportunity to build machines that people would like and would allow them to do that kind of thing. That's just one example I can think of.
I agree with Andrea. I'm not quite sure I know what embedded means, but I do know that, for instance, what was it, last year, I think, Yamaha announced going with the Montevideo real-time Linux for various devices, and I believe, and I'm not sure about this, but I think they were queried on whether or not they ever intended to use such devices in, say, a synthesizer line, and I think that it's possible. I mean, they might. It's also good to remember that many devices, telephony devices, handheld video devices, and so forth, are a very great field. It certainly scales, you know, to the devices, and this is also Linux audio software. So, I know that there's a lot of interest in it. Like Paul says, there's some in the music field. There's some real-world products. Yes, those are.
There's also, of course, the obvious example of that we saw here, the Lion's Track system, which, if the guys weren't here to tell you, is just a keyboard, and in some sense is an embedded system, but it's just running Linux. I mean, and it's not even a custom. I mean, it's a regular low latency version of Linux, but it's just a regular motherboard, you know. So this again comes back to what's embedded. I mean, this is no special version of Linux. You don't have to be a hardware engineer, you know. It's but it's still the same kind of thing.
Yeah, as Paul mentioned, I guess there will be two different directions of embedded Linux. One is so-called embedded Linux so far. So, for example, a mobile phone with ARM processor and or very small PDA and so on, or Yamaha case would be in this as this much to this case. And another case is just a general, nowadays PC, to embed in a dedicated system. And I think this will happen to many small companies. It's a good business chance because the Linux is very flexible and you can bind any softwares you want. And yeah, you can develop the kernel, change the kernel, so on, as long as you put your source code and patches publicly. So I think this can likely happen.
Okay, so thank you all. And before we finally close down this session, there is one last question I will ask each of you, and you are all urged to answer in maybe 15 seconds, no more. And this is the question. Now, we have been doing some crystal ball looking for the far future. Now, each of you tell me, what is the next thing that you will do when you come home? Because right now, I feel like I want to go back and start coding on something I've been working on. What will be the next thing you do? Quick.
Get back home to my wife, have a good time, rest a little bit, relax. That's it.
On the plane, I hope to stop auto crashing the way it did in my demo. And then when I actually get home, probably the same as Fernando.
well, get a good sleep after a long night. I don't want to see many bug reports on other bug tracking system, but possibly it can happen.
I think I'm going to collect all the papers that I wrote discussing with people in person during this conference. It was a really interesting opportunity for me, for the Agnora project, to discuss about the future, possible projects, etc. And for this, I would like to publicly thank again Frank Neumann, Matthias Nagorny, and all the staff at ZKIM for organizing all of this. Thank you.
Well, I guess my 15 seconds are up, right? Well, to follow the suit of Fernando, I guess I'll spend some more time with my wife and my son. And because I've been in a country of good beer, I guess I'll have Hefeweizen with my wife. And, well, I guess not my son, at least my wife.
As soon as I get home, I'm going to drink steadily for an hour and sleep for 3 days.
Okay, so thank you all for taking part in this panel discussion. And I think this mostly ends the second International Linux Audio Conference. Matthias has got some final words to say.
Yeah, we have to reach the end of this conference. And therefore, I'd briefly like to thank ZKM and the Institute for Music and Acoustics for hosting this conference. Special thanks. Special thanks to Gert Stipper, who coordinated everything during the last days here, and also thanks to Thomas Sauer for the technical direction of everything. And yeah, we had 4 concerts here, so special thanks also to the Tonmeister Joachim Gossmann. So finally, I'd like to thank you all for coming, and I'm happy to announce that Ludger Brümmer has agreed that ZKM is willing to host this event, this conference, next year as well. So.
This is all great and nice, but you know, when the first people started departing today, some of the speakers and so on, I heard this short term, which I already hear with horrors now, see you next year. You know how many hours I've slept in the last 4 days, but thanks anyway, Ludger, thanks a lot.
So we haven't yet fixed a date for that, but I think it's a good idea to do that soon. So watch out for this on the website of the event. So www.zkm.de/lac. So we'll try to find a date as soon as possible. So then we have more time for preparation as last time. So yeah, have a safe trip home.
And the final words is, for those of you who are still going to stay until tomorrow, at least for the speakers, we are going to have a dinner tonight together at a proper Italian restaurant, I think. So I guess we'll leave from here around 7 p.m., I'd say. You might have some more coffee or something downstairs in the cafeteria. And for those of you who want to accompany us, you can try. I don't know how much place they have. I'll try to arrange the other way around. How many of you are willing or planning to come with us? Just some hand signs so I can count. This evening, yeah? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Okay, roughly 15 to 20. Okay, that's fine. Okay, then we really hope you all had a nice and interesting 4 days and wish you a good trip back home and perhaps then see you next year. Yeah. Thanks.